Good morning, Shabbat Shalom. On this last day of 2011, we continue our studies today into the book of Ezekiel. Today is an extremely important study. It's massive, and I am feeling overwhelmed, wondering how can I present such a study in an hour's time. I guess the answer is I can't. I've been presenting pieces of it. Last week before, this is our website we have updated. We have added a little picture of me. Since I'm the one who writes and teaches the studies, the picture is there. And our logo, how do you like that? Let us know what you think of that. The background for today's study, a concept which must be understood in order to make sense of what we're going to teach today, is the understanding of what happens when we die. What is the state of man in death? And if you have not thoroughly reviewed that concept, then I would ask that you go to the website, go to Destiny of Man, and go to Where Are the Dead? You can print out this written study, and then you can look at the printed study while you listen to an MP3 audio file recording of me teaching this study. If you do not thoroughly understand that the dead are asleep, that they sleep until resurrection. If you weren't asleep, then what do you need with the resurrection? So I would ask that any of you who do not understand that concept, please go to the website. Please review that study. So today we are continuing with Ezekiel the prophet. And we want to summarize what we've covered in the last sections. We have talked about the fact that Jesus Christ will return to this earth at the end of the sixth day, the 6,000 years. With the Lord, 1,000 years is a day is as 1,000 years. So Jesus Christ will return at the end of 6,000 years. Those who are in covenant with him will then go with him to the Father's house, which is heaven itself. And they will then enter into a preparation for the priesthood. Revelation 20, verse 5 says, everyone raised in the first resurrection will be a priest of God and of Christ. And so they will live with him 1,000 years, during which they will prepare for the priesthood. This was our lesson last week, was the priesthood. Those who are left upon the earth, it says that every person living on earth whose name is not written in the Lamb's Book of Life will, absolutely will, worship the beast in his image and take his mark. And those who worship the beast and take his mark will suffer the wrath of God that's poured out full strength in the seven last plagues. They will be tormented with fire and brimstone, it says, in the presence of the angels, in the presence of the Lamb who has come that second time, and they will be tormented with fire and brimstone as the earth and the works therein are burned up. Satan at that time will be bound to the abyss, the bottomless pit, for 1,000 years. And we believe that that is the uninhabited earth, because Jeremiah the prophet says he saw the earth after the great day of the Lord. It was without form and void. Same words translated abyss in the New Testament. The point being that Jesus Christ cannot rule the nations during the seventh day, the seventh millennium, because the earth is desolate. It's uninhabited. The nations are all dead. So he can't rule it during that seventh millennium. And the prophecy says he will rule the nations. So when does he rule them? The eighth day. So, that's what we covered in the last two lessons. We covered the seventh millennium and we covered the priesthood. Now, we're going to go on to the eighth day. And for those who have studied the ancient tabernacle, the ancient sacrificial system, the type set up by God, I'm going to review those ancient types, because those who have studied this ancient system, once they look at the types, they're convinced. The eighth day is mentioned so many times in Scripture, you just can't get away from it. The firstborn were to be given to the Lord on the eighth day. And God said, Israel is my firstborn. So, all right, if Israel's the firstborn, then when would Israel be given to the Lord? The eighth day. When's the eighth day? The eighth millennium. Yeshua will present us to his Father, humanity, a complete and whole people on the eighth day. The eighth millennium. 1 Corinthians 5:24 says that Jesus Christ will present the kingdom to God the Father as the very last act in this drama. Circumcision. If you remember, a newborn male Israelite was circumcised on the eighth day. So the question would be, all right, then when is Israel, the people of God, fully circumcised? When is all of the flesh cut away? When are we truly spiritual people? When are we truly in covenant? Answer, eighth day, eighth millennium. Ezekiel, you know, our book here, Ezekiel 36, I'll take you from the nations, gather you out of all the countries, bring you into your own land. Then, not till then, will I sprinkle clean water upon you and make you clean. And I'll give you a new heart and a new spirit. I'll take the heart of stone out of your flesh. I'll give you a heart of flesh, and I'll put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes. So this does not take place, not fully, not completely, until the eighth day. This word, I'll take the heart of stone out of your flesh and give you a heart of flesh. This is spiritual circumcision. Circumcision is of the heart, Romans 2:29, in the spirit, not in the letter. And Colossians 2:11, in him you are being circumcised with the circumcision made without hands, putting off the body of the sins of the flesh. All right, then we're not fully circumcised until the eighth day. When's the eighth day? The eighth millennium. Healing. When will we be fully healed? In the Old Testament, the law given from Mount Sinai through Moses from God, there was a 7-day quarantine for anyone with an infectious disease. And then on the eighth day, they offered sacrifices, and then they were considered clean if they were healed. Separated from God for 7 millennia, and then finally united, fully healed, fully restored, not till the eighth day. It was all pictured in those Old Testament types, those prophecies from the mountain. And this study is up at the website, so I would invite anyone to go back and read through it. Leprosy. I mean, there was no greater symbol of being unclean than to have leprosy. When was the leper fully, finally cleansed? Even if he was healed, he was not declared to be fully clean and united until the eighth day. And we obviously have all been lepers. We've all touched death, you know, another ancient type. The person who had touched death was not allowed to rejoin the community. He was not declared clean until the eighth day. And the altar of sacrifice in the courtyard. If the altar of sacrifice was defiled, remember Areopagus Epiphanes sacrificed a pig on the altar? The Nebuchadnezzar's army defiled the temple, destroyed everything. When they came back from Babylon, they built a new altar. That altar could not be ceremonially clean, ready to be used until the eighth day. When's the eighth day? The eighth millennium. So when would the altar in Ezekiel's temple courtyard be ready to be used? Not until the eighth day. Can't happen during the seventh millennium. That's not the eighth day. I'll leave you to read through this study slowly, but my point is simply that the ancient types, all of the ancient types, point forward to the eighth day. In the ancient types, in the weekly cycle, on the Sabbath, no manna fell. In the wilderness for 40 years. No manna fell on the Sabbath. Who's the manna? Jesus Christ. So you cannot have Jesus Christ on the earth during the Sabbath millennium, the seventh millennium. It doesn't fit the type. It doesn't fit. And I know somebody's going to say, oh no, that's just desolation. That's not a Sabbath. Well, 2 Chronicles 36:21 was a prophecy about the destruction coming by the Babylonians, but it fits. And the prophecy said about the land, said as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath. So desolation does not rule out Sabbath keeping. The point is that there's no crops planted, there's nothing harvested on the earth during the eighth day. So you know, these evangelical preachers are saying, oh no, Jesus Christ is coming back and he's going to immediately set up his kingdom. And then immediately we're going to have all these people coming into the kingdom. No, doesn't fit the ancient types. You can't have anything planted, the truth sown. You can't have anything harvested, souls coming in, on the seventh day, on the seventh millennium, in the seventh year. The eighth day special feast that followed the Feast of Tabernacles in the fall, the harvest festival. They dwelt in booths that they constructed for 7 days. And these temporary shelters were to remind them that they were pilgrims, that this was temporary, that they were on a journey. On the eighth day, the one additional day that followed the Feast of Tabernacles, they took down their booths. They no longer dwelt in booths. They just were there in Jerusalem. And it was symbolic that on the eighth day, we're no longer living in booths. Our journey is completed. We're no longer pilgrims or wanderers or sojourners. We now live in Jerusalem. so many ancient types, but I would invite you, please go read through the study, be convinced of the ancient types. Our study for today, our main study for today, the eighth day, Messiah reigns. This study has been my focus now since 2007. I became convinced of this scenario many years ago. And I began searching and searching and searching the scriptures. And the more I searched, the more I found. And the more I found, the more convinced I became. We're studying the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel the prophet. Ezekiel's vision, more than any other prophet, takes us forward to that eighth day. Ezekiel the prophet saw the temple. He saw the river flow out. He saw Messiah's reign. You know, Daniel's more concerned with events on this earth that lead up to the second coming. So is Revelation. Revelation is far more concerned with last day events that lead up to the second coming. They don't say very much about events after the second coming. You know, there's a little bit in Revelation chapter 20, just a few verses in Revelation chapter 20 that talk about the second resurrection, the Gog-Magog battle, and the final destruction of the wicked, the rebellious. But Ezekiel's prophecy, wow. Wow. All right, so we want to look at this eighth day reign of Messiah. Every prophet from Isaiah to Malachi talks about two main themes. Disobedience resulting in destruction. I mean, it's there over and over and over and over and over. And we talked about that as part of our Ezekiel study. The destruction that resulted from disobedience and loss of God's blessing, loss of his protection. The second theme that every prophet speaks of is the return with healing, the return to the land. Healing of the people, healing of the land. So we'll talk about the return to the land. I have collected passages that speak about the return to the land. Now, I have not given the full text of every passage. There's just not room. I would invite you to go to the scriptures and read it for yourself. So we'll look at the highlights of each of these verses. And remember, in prophecy, a detailed event-by-event description, that's not the purpose of the prophecies. The prophecies give us a sweeping overview. They present principles, and then they give us an overview. They promise the eventual victory over every enemy of God. They promise a return to a perfect relationship with the Lord. So, Isaiah 11:11-16. Everybody knows this passage because the wolf will lie down with the lamb and the earth will be full of the knowledge of the Lord. It says the rod from the stem of Jesse, of course that would be Jesus Christ, he will slay the wicked. When does he slay the wicked? Well, at the second coming, yes. There's a second resurrection when a few more will be slain at the end of the eighth day. But he does slay the wicked at the second coming. And it says this root of Jesse will stand as a banner to the people. And it says the Gentiles will seek him. The Gentiles will seek him. That tells you that it's not over. More people will come into the kingdom. In that day, it says, the Lord will set his hand to recover the remnant of his people who are left. He will assemble the outcasts of Israel, and he'll gather together the dispersed of Judah from the four corners of the earth, not just from Babylon, where they went for 70 years, but from the four corners of the earth. In addition to that, there'll be a highway for the remnant of his people who are left from Assyria. Do you remember the northern tribes were carried off to Assyria? So this return is for the whole house of Israel. Remember that. It's for the whole house of Israel. And of course, remember that you and I are Israelites. We're Israelites. We've been grafted in through Messiah. That's Ephesians 2. It's Romans 11. We have been grafted in. The return of the captives from Babylon, that was the type. That was the type. The coming return, that's the fulfillment. In the passage up here, the return and the healing of the ransomed, it follows the general destruction of the earth and the nations. All right, so we have to have destruction of the earth and the nations, then the return of all of Israel to the land. And here's several more passages for you to consider and look for those points. Look for each of those points. Jeremiah 23:3-8. And remember, Jeremiah the prophet was in Israel while Ezekiel the prophet was with the captives in Babylon. Jeremiah 23:3-8. But I will gather the remnant of my flock out of all countries where I've driven them and bring them back to their folds. A king called the branch of righteousness will come to reign over the earth, not just over Judea, over the earth. Therefore, behold, the days are coming, says the Lord. They shall no longer say, as the Lord lives, who brought up the children of Israel from the land of Egypt. They won't even talk about that, Exodus. But as the Lord lives, who brought up and led the descendants of the house of Israel from the north country and from all the countries where I had driven them, and they shall dwell in their own land. This is what's called the Greater Exodus. The Greater Exodus. The coming, the future return to the land, the future regathering of Israel, that is the Greater Exodus. It's going to make the one from Egypt look tiny by comparison. And I would just make a point here. I know that the evangelicals out there are teaching that we are seeing prophecy fulfilled before our eyes this very day in the current nation of Israel. Because they have come back from the dead, it is said. You know, the nation didn't exist. They were all dispersed to the lands. So now we're seeing them come back from the dead. We're seeing a return to the land. We're seeing them gather the Israelites from Russia, from Ethiopia, from all the nations, gathering them back to this nation of Israel. And, you know, it sounds very, very plausible. They could have a point here. And since I'm a big believer in recurring fulfillment, it really could be a fulfillment. But I don't believe it's the final fulfillment. You know, if this is supposed to make the Exodus from Egypt look puny by comparison, well, in this return, this current return to the land of Israel, I didn't see any plagues. I didn't see any opening of the Red Sea. I didn't see any water brought from the rock. I didn't see any manna falling from heaven. You know, all we saw was a persecuted, war-weary people fighting their way into a portion of the ancient homeland. The Temple Mount, the temple was not restored to the Son of David. And I know they say, oh, that's coming up at the second coming. It's going to happen, the second coming. Well, all right, but the lion is not lying down with the lamb, and so I'm just not buying it. I think it could be a type. I think it could be a partial fulfillment, but it's not the fulfillment, because the return that's prophesied is of the whole house of Israel, including all the dead. You have to have a resurrection from the dead. I mean, Daniel was promised that he would stand and rise to his inheritance at the end of the days. Well, we got to have Daniel there. We have to have all these people who have died. And that certainly hasn't happened yet. But if Satan is trying to prepare the world to worship him, if he is going to deceive, if possible, the very elect, you know, the law-abiding, Sabbath-keeping, worshipful people of God, then, wow, what better way than to deceive the entire world into believing that Christ has come. So let's say that Iran does lob a bomb in there and destroys the Temple Mount and blows up half of Israel. And the world responds by declaring that mount to be an international city and that mountain to be sacred for the world. And they allow the rebuilding of a third temple, and they name it Ezekiel's Temple, and they make it according to the dimensions of Ezekiel's Temple, and they make it 200 feet high. And suddenly you have a glorious shining being who appears in that rebuilt temple on the mount. And he claims to be Christ come. And to the Christians, he's Christ. To the Jews, he's Messiah. To the Hindus, he's the Imam Mahdi or the 12th great avatar. Or to the Muslims, he's Christ, he's the Imam. And if you're an atheist, well, he's a glorious alien who claims to have visited our planet 2,000 years ago and been murdered, and they beamed him up to his spaceship and brought him back to life, and it made it look like a resurrection. How many times have we seen that on Star Trek? I mean, a whole generation of human beings is being prepared for exactly this event. Because Satan is going to deceive the entire world into believing that he is Christ come. And so everybody knows, if Christ has come, well, then we have to have Israel restored. We have to have Ezekiel's temple. We have to have a resurrection. Well, if they just make it look like Israel's been raised from the dead because it didn't exist and now it does exist. They make that the resurrection. You could see how he's sucking everyone in to this deception. So, no, I do not believe that the current nation of Israel completely fulfills the prophecy. We're looking for another one. Because he says, I'm going to bring back the captivity of my people to Israel and Judah, and I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers. Well, that current territory that Israel has is only a tiny portion of what was given to David. Jeremiah chapter 31 says that Ephraim, that's a name that was given to the 10 northern tribes that were hauled off to Assyria, that they will return to Zion, and that Israel and Judah will enter into a new covenant with the Lord. And the outcome of this covenant, they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, for I will remember their sin no more. This is a recurring theme. This is a principle that you should look for as you read through all these prophecies. The new covenant is made with redeemed Israel, meaning Israel and Judah, in the land after they have been gathered. So if somebody asks you, are you in covenant? Well, yes, I would say yes. Well, are you in the new covenant or the old covenant? I simply say I'm in covenant. I believe that the sacrificial system has been abolished. It is obsolete because we have the one true sacrifice. But the rest of the law, the Ten Commandments, those are still valid and still standing. But the true new covenant is a miracle of God, and it is not made with Israel, with Judah, until they have been returned to the land. We begin the process here, but it is not completed until the eighth day. Jeremiah chapter 33, the whole chapter. I'll cause the captives of Judah and the captives of Israel to return, and will rebuild those places as at the first. And then they, Israel and Judah, the whole of Israel, meaning all the grafted in Israelites too, they will be a name of joy, a praise, and an honor before all nations of the earth, who will hear about all the good that I do for them, and they will fear and tremble. A descendant of David will reign and execute judgment and righteousness in the earth. So the picture that's presented is Israel and Judah together again. They're dead, resurrected, healed, restored, while all the nations of the earth witness this and tremble. It tells me, that tells me right there, that this event, that this picture happens on the eighth day, that it happens after the return to the land and after the nations have been raised in the second resurrection. I mean, how are the nations supposed to see this return to Israel, dwelling in the land, blessed and in covenant with the Lord? How are they supposed to see this? During the seventh millennium, they're all dead. The earth is deserted. They have to see it on the eighth day. Now, I was always taught as a kid that the second resurrection was simply to raise people and then to execute them by fire. And you can't do that, you know, raised immediately, executed, if the nations are going to have time to witness God blessing Israel. There has to be a time period here. If this eighth day study is to be true, we're looking for three elements. We're looking for Israel and Judah return to the land, return to all of the land given to Abraham, promised to Abraham. We are looking for Messiah reigning on David's throne, and we're looking for the nations. We're looking for the nations dwelling on the earth around Israel, who are witness to what is happening for Israel. And by Israel, I mean combined Israel, Israel-Judah, with all the Gentiles who've been grafted in. This is the kingdom. We look for those three elements. Ezekiel 20, God promised that all the house of Israel would serve the Lord God on my holy mountain, and that he would be hallowed in them before the Gentiles. Well, in order for him to be hallowed before the Gentiles, you have to have some Gentiles to see it. Ezekiel 28, when I've gathered the house of Israel from the peoples among whom they were scattered, and I'm hallowed in them in the sight of the Gentiles. You know, that's never happened. That has not happened, not as yet. Then they will dwell in their own land, which I gave to my servant Jacob. You know, the land area promised to Abraham was approximately 48,000 square miles. It would be the area covered by The state of Mississippi, slightly larger than the state of Pennsylvania. Well, the current nation of Israel doesn't even come close. Ezekiel 34, after the Lord has brought his sheep back to their own land, then he will set up one shepherd over them, a descendant of King David, Jesus Christ, of course, and I will make a covenant of peace with them. All right. Over and over and over and over again, this new covenant is made with the combined Israel after they've been brought back to the land. And the nations which are left all around you shall know it. They will see it. They will see you rebuild the ruined places and plant what is desolate. They will see it. And I believe that this is a reference, that the nations around you, this is a reference to those raised in the second resurrection. There's a gathering of Israel, a return, then complete forgiveness. That's when the new covenant is fully realized. And the resurrected Gentiles see this. The sequence is resurrection, then return. So Ezekiel 37, 1 to 14 is all about the dead bones. It's all about the dead bones come back to life. And the dead bones, it says, are the whole house of Israel. Ezekiel 37, 11. They are raised from their graves, then returned to the land, then they experience the new covenant. Ezekiel 37, 1 to 14, I will open your graves and cause you to come up out of your graves and bring you into the land. All right. When does the resurrection take place? Do you remember from our study of the state of the dead? When does the resurrection take place? At the second coming. At the second coming. That's when the resurrection takes place. So we have resurrection to the Father's house, 1,000 years, earth barren. Then we come back to the land. Then we have returned to the land, rebuilding the waste places, build Ezekiel's temple. The river flows out. Everything comes back to life. There's the second resurrection. It fits. It fits. In the recent return of biological descendants of Jacob to the present nation of Israel, it doesn't fit. It does not fit. It doesn't include the whole house of Israel. All the dead are missing. We haven't really had a resurrection. Most of the descendants, you know, all the 10 northern tribes, they're still missing. You know, the vast majority of those who have been grafted in through Messiah are missing. Most of them are dead. If I was to apply for a visa to immigrate to Israel, I would be turned down. Why? Because I'm a Christian. They don't want Christians over there. And yet, I'm an Israelite. I've been grafted in through Messiah. All right. Ezekiel's temple. We're studying the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapters 40 to 48 is all about the temple. The promise is, in Ezekiel 37, 15 to 27, the promise is that the Lord would gather the children of Israel. Judah and Israel would rejoin into one kingdom, never to be separated again. One king over them from the line of David, Messiah. And the Lord would enter into an everlasting covenant of peace with them. And then the promise is, my tabernacle also shall be with them. And the nations will know that I, the Lord, sanctify Israel, set them apart for a holy purpose, when my sanctuary is in their midst forevermore.